Welcome to a very special holiday edition of the Velo News Podcast. I'm Fred Dreyer, editor-in-chief of Velo News Magazine. It's the day after Christmas. I am sitting in the basement of the Velo News World Headquarters, staring at two empty chairs. That's right, Spencer and Dane, both out of town, both back east with their families. But fear not, listener, you will not have to listen to me drone on and on for the entire episode. I have a great interview coming up that I did with Helen Wyman. Helen Wyman, British rider, veteran of the women's cyclocross scene, and she has some great insight on some of the dynamics shifting going on in women's cyclocross right now, everything from the increase in prize money to the lack of start money to why women's cross races are so dang difficult to predict. We have a great conversation about the state of women's international cyclocross. So that is coming up. And we will be back to our regular programming this coming week after the new year with all the takes, all the news, interviews, stuff like that. But, you know, this is our final podcast of 2018. And I wanted to thank all of you for tuning in week in, week out to this podcast, to Fast Talk, to Dan's Tech Podcast. We really love what we do. It's a lot of fun. And we love hearing from you. We love your comments. We love your tweets, Facebook comments, stuff on email. Never hesitate to reach out to us with what you like, what you don't like, what you think we could do better, etc. And we have some really big stuff coming up in 2019. A couple episodes ago, I talked about the redesign we did for Velo News Magazine. I have the magazine right in front of me. I am looking at it. Listen to that. It's a big, thick, fat magazine. And I couldn't be happier with the way this redesign came out. We have big photos, illustrations. We have new elements of the magazine, bringing in history, photography, and you know, the same journalism, storytelling, reporting that you can expect with Velo News. We have a great story about Alejandro Valverde that Andrew Hood did. Andy tracked down a bunch of Valverde's friends and fellow competitors from when he was a junior, talked about what type of a rider Valverde was like when he was a teenager. And he really goes deep on the topic of why it is that people like you and me, North American fans, see Valverde a certain way, probably through the lens of Operación Puerto and the fact that he's never really commented on his checkered past, and why fans in Spain don't feel that way, and why Valverde never really has discussed that topic. He goes deep on that. I have a story that takes us inside the world of the Tour de France broadcast. This past year at the Tour de France, I shadowed the NBC Sports producers for a day. Got to see inside the wacky, chaotic, and very expensive world of Tour de France broadcasts. And I have a lot of other reporting in there about some of the interesting technological and business dynamics going on in the broadcast around cycling and some of the debates within that world. We also have great stuff from Dane about the World Tour. We break down the big storylines that we're going to be following in road racing in 2019. We just have a bunch of good stuff in here. And I'm not just saying that because I'm the editor of this magazine. I legitimately think this thing looks great. We put a lot of effort into it, so please take a look. We're also going to have some new fun digital programs coming up in 2019. I can't talk all about it right now, but we're going to have some elements that dig deep into Velo News history. You know, we've been around for 47 years. Outside this room, I have 47 years worth of old Velo News magazines, print magazines. The Velo News used to come out every 2 weeks, so you do the math. That's a ton of magazines with lots of stories, profiles, race reports, feature stories, analysis, tech reviews, that type of stuff. And we have some fun projects coming up in 2019 that's going to use that stuff. We're also going to be at the races in 2019. You know, the usual races, Tour de France, Giro d'Italia, the classics, but we're also going to be at a ton of North American mass participant events coming up this year. You know, this past year, we went to the full Epic Ride Series. We went to a lot of gravel races. I was at Dirty Kanza. We're going to increase that in 2019. So stay tuned to the podcast, villanews.com. You know, reach out to us. Find out what races we're going to be at, because we're going to be there writing about the events, really taking a temperature check on the state of North American mass participant cycling. Because, I mean, we ride our bikes, we participate in these events, and we have some thoughts and opinions on what's going on with participant cycling. So check that out. Again, I just want to thank all of you for continuing to listen to the podcast, read the site, read the magazine, check us out on social media. You know, it really is you guys that keep us doing what we love to do. So thanks again. And let's get to my interview with Helen Wyman. We jump right into it. I was talking to her before hitting record about the topic of shorter women's races. There were a number of women's cyclocross races this year that ended before they hit the 40-minute mark. A lot of people were upset that the races were a little too short. So that's where we jump in with Helen Wyman. And again, we will catch up in the new year. Here's Helen Wyman.
Yeah, so on the time thing, I think 3 years ago, it was one of my things in the ECI when I was on the cross commission, was to try and get 50-minute races. Because if you go from 40 minutes to an hour, so it's the same as the men's, then it's quite hard to add extra 20 minutes training into your training in one season. So to go 50 minutes and then to progress from there was really important. And I asked for that, and the only compromise I got was them to change the rule from 40 minutes for women to a minimum of 40 minutes, which at the time there were bigger battles to fight in terms of prize money, in terms of other things for women's racing, junior racing, under 23 worlds, all those kinds of things. So at the time, I couldn't really push that any further when I already had so much on my... There's only so much they would give, you know? And so then we still, for the next 2 years after that rule came in, people were still a little bit confused. And so they didn't read minimum 40 minutes. They just read 40 to 50 minutes. And so we still had maybe 15 or 16 races in that first season that were under 40 minutes, which was against the UCI rules. And even now, this year, I know of four races that were under 40 minutes. I was at one of them, and then there was the Hammer, I think, was under 40 minutes. And it's kind of, to me, it just seems really silly. And I understand that there are 16-year-old girls racing in with the elite women, and I understand that we need a junior category for women's cross. And I don't know if you've just seen the news I just put out about there's going to be the first international junior women's race at Lunau that's just for junior women.
Yep.
And it's the only one that's ever been in a major series. And that's really cool. But at the same time, a 16-year-old girl can race on the road and do 140 kilometers. So holding back the entire women's elite field by saying we can't do more than 40 minutes because there are junior girls in our category is kind of, to me, counterproductive, when it should be making us have a junior category and then the elite women can do 50 minutes. So I think it will eventually come, and I don't know, as every 4 years they change the commission. And so my turn was done, and I don't know what they've discussed since then. And I do hope, I didn't leave them much more to fix, really. So I do hope that that's one of the things that is going to come in the future.
Based on the conversations that you've had in the sport, what are the structural arguments, the structural reasons that people give for keeping the races short? Obviously, you know, there's the junior women's inclusion and fears about them not being able to race that long. But, I mean, is it because of scheduling? Is it because people are afraid that's going to cut into the men's time? Like, what are the arguments against making the women's races longer?
Basically the junior girls. And then they also have suggested that it's really hard to run four races in one day, which is, I'm kind of cynical of, because I've been to America and you guys can get like 8 or 9 in a day. So I don't think you have a problem with timing. And there's something like at World Cups, there's like an hour between the under 23s and the elite women. Mm-hmm. So, and they say, oh, that's for the staff, the people at the race to have lunch. Like, yeah, okay. Okay, I don't think they need an hour. I'm fairly sure we could have an extra 10 minutes because, it, you know, if you said women's cross is 50 minutes, it runs in line with the under 23s. Mm. And the commissaires understand that because they understand they get as close to 50 minutes, whether that's 2 minutes over or 2 minutes under, they're still as close as they can. And it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have 54-minute races. It might mean we have 48-minute races, but it means we're never going to have another 39-minute race, that's for sure.
You know, another storyline that we have been looking at is just the unpredictability of the women's races when matched up against the very predictability of the men's races. You know, in your conversations with people at the races in Belgium, in the Netherlands, is that something that people address? Is that something that, you know, people within the sport are acknowledging?
Yeah, definitely. In the material, impasse, what's that called in English? In the pit. Uh-huh. Lots of the helpers of the riders are regularly, and Steph are regularly talking and saying, like, this year to get a top 10 is last year's podium. There's so many more riders that are capable of getting the results, that it's incredible. And at a World Cup, it's hard to get in the top 20 this year, which is something that you've never said in the past. Pardon me. It's really exciting. And I think part of the reason there's been so many more riders able to win those races is also because the weather's been so dry. Mm. And so the courses have been quite fast. And that allows better bunch racing. Whereas when it's super muddy and gloggy and, you know, the strongest riders ride away, it's kind of individual racing. Whereas this year, Gavre had a bit of mud, but then that's it. That's the only race so far. And then you've got a lot of the younger, the people that benefited from the first year of under 23 World Championships are moving into the elite. And as they become elite, a lot of the teams in Belgium have signed female riders and have taken those riders on, and they're taking them up a level. And those girls have a lot more skills to start with that they're working with. And that's really exciting. And I think they've had a pathway with the under 23s. Mm-hmm. A lot of those riders have stayed in the sport, but also that as the prize money becomes equal, it is, of any cycling discipline, there is the most prize money in any women's cycling discipline. So the incentives are there financially. The incentives are there in terms of teams are taking on the foreign riders, because there's not actually that many Belgian riders. There's Sana, Ellen, Lowe's, Lara Verdonschot. And then after that, you know, you don't have any, so you take on the Dutch, the Italians, the English, anyone that's there, basically, in the top 10 that you can have on your team. And then the television, and that's the big teams in Belgium want the same television time, and the television focuses on the front of the race. And when Matthew and Wout are the front of the race, they're quite regularly a minute ahead of everyone else. Whereas in the women's cross, you can have 10 riders. In Wachtebeke, the day before Kokkeleide, there was 10 riders with 2 laps to go. And from 10 different teams. Wow. So all of those teams are getting television coverage that they don't get from the men. So I think there's a huge number of factors, which it takes time for these things to build and for these things to happen and for us to get to where we are. But I think it will only get bigger and better. Really?
Another dynamic we heard, which this dynamic is nothing new, is with the prize money at hand and the TV time at hand, it does convince other talented female riders from mountain bike and from road who maybe do have some cross experience to commit to a partial cross calendar. Maybe not doing the full thing, but dropping in and out of the calendar and choosing some races to do. I think that's something that we've seen for a few years, though, in women's cross, you know, this sort of top women, you know, talented women from mountain bike or road coming in and choosing their battles.
I think you've seen that a lot in the past, but I think this year, Lucinda Brand, mm-hmm. that's it really. I mean, other than Lucinda Brand, I can't think of, I mean, Evie Richards came in at the beginning of the season and took a break, but now she's back into a cross season until world. So whereas in the past, you would have had riders like Lechner drop in and drop out. You would have had Anne-Marie Worst drop in and drop out. Maybe a rider like Yara Castellain would have focused on the road, and now she's permanently. Voss would have just done the odd race, and now Mariana started in September, and yeah, she's done fewer races, but then she is still, she's still trying to recover long term from the fatigue she had a few years ago, so she's not gonna over push herself. But I think this year less so than other years, because so many of those riders have committed to a full cross season.
That's interesting. How does that change the dynamic? You know, in years past, when you had to be worried about, you know, some World Cup mountain biker with incredible fitness and handling dropping in and dropping out, versus now where it seems to be a consistent field, how does that change things?
Well, I think in the past, yeah, around Wilds time, you would have a lot fitter riders, because as a cross rider, it's hard to maintain your endurance-based fitness, basically. And so your top end is very good, but you might not have the full engine that you had at the beginning of the year. And so by Worlds, yeah. But I think it's actually, you may have had those riders come in at Worlds, but now this year, being in the top eight in the world ranking is incredibly hard to do. And because those riders are doing a full season, they're racking up the UCI points, and there's a huge fight for the top 15, top 20 even, that you've never seen in the past. And so you may take away the fact that they'll be super fit at Worlds, but you have to then add in the fact that, you know, they're fighting you for the front row position. So it's kind of, yeah, take one and change it for another. And but that's not a bad thing for women's cyclocross. As a rider, yeah, you're like, gah, you know, I've just dropped to ninth in the world ranking. I was up at fifth in the beginning of the season. And all these younger, the riders like Arzufi and Anne-Marie Worst and Mariana's full season, they've come ahead of me. Whereas in the past, they would never have done that because they didn't do the full season. But in terms of the sport in general, it's a fantastic thing for the sport.
You know, a few days ago, we saw some information out on Twitter about some of the start money for Wout van Aert and Mathieu van der Poel, saying it was, you know, in the 10,000 euro range, or sort of 8 to 10,000 euro range for some of these big races. You know, start money is a huge driver and incentive for these top elite men on the Super Prestige series and some of the other major series, not the World Cup series, but some of the other major series, because they can, you know, generate healthy revenues off of that. From what we've heard, start money for the women is significantly less. I mean, it's, you know, a few thousand or a few hundred euro for some of the top women. What dynamic does that have on women's cross?
I mean, if you added up every woman start running in a race, you'd probably be around 10,000. So it's not, you know, one Wout van Aert would pay for the entire women's field, but I don't think it necessarily impacts on the sport so much, because we've come from a place where it's always been pretty much the same as what it is now, really. But now we have equal prize money in C1 races and C2 races, whereas 3-4 years ago we didn't. And 1,400 euros to win a race is significantly more than the 350 that we had 3 years ago. So for us, and nearly every race in Belgium is a C1. So for the women, we've actually seen increases in what money we take home from a race, but through the competition edge. And personally, I understand start money. I understand what it's about. Personally, I'd rather have bigger prize funds, and the people that get the results get the money on the day, basically. And that's kind of more how it works in Belgium for the women, unless you're the very top, like Sana or Mariana, maybe Katie Compton, riders like that. But if you're not Belgian, you're never going to get the start money of a Belgian rider. And if you're not, And then the men's pits, traditionally, even when Sven was racing, he was still getting 10,000 for a standalone race and 8,000 per series. So, like, I don't think start money's actually changed that much for either the men or the women. And I just think that the fact that there's other ways to earn revenue, there were never any teams that supported women really in the past. And now to be a UCI team, you have to have a woman. So there are a fully paid contracted women that we didn't have 3-4 years ago. So I think for the women, the start money isn't as important.
Interesting.
It would be nice to have it, but we're never going to have it. So we should focus on the things that we can affect, like the individual round World Cup prize money by 2022 will be equal to the men, which would then be €5,000 to win the race compared to the 2,000 it is now.
One thing I was wondering was that with the women's racing becoming so unpredictable and becoming such a good show, if that may impact start money going forward.
I don't really know on that, because it's kind of related to gate entry rather than television. So you're always going to get good riders to create a race. But as do the riders traditionally in the past, Sven would get 10,000 people to a bike race and they would come to watch him.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't he get €8,000? Because they're all paying €15 each. So why shouldn't he get a cut? And that's the tradition of start money. And Wout and Matthew arguably don't bring as many riders, as many spectators, as traditionally someone like Sven or Bart Wellens would, but they've maintained that money because it's been there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think start money is a really difficult one to argue. In an ideal world, it would be a travel expense and everyone gets the same, basically. But it's never going to be that. And you can't change a tradition that's based on it's based on something that's not really real. You know, so it's not like, you know, you go to a race like EKZ in Switzerland, fantastic series, and they actually pay a limited travel expense money to riders, and then they double the prize fund for the riders, basically. Because they want to draw riders, they do have to pay a travel expenses, but it's so much less than what you would necessarily get outside of the country. But their prize money is almost double. So it's kind of, you know, what would you rather do? And there might be a fair system where you say, if you're this in the world ranking, if you've won, you've had this results in a World Cup, you should get this much money. But ultimately, the organisers aren't going to say, we're going to do that, because they'd have to pay out so much more and they wouldn't necessarily get any more than they already get in terms of the riders. So it's, I think it's a really strange one to try and fix in terms of equality. And I think it's a really strange one that isn't really going to change in our lifetimes.
The big news that you had put out the other day and that I've seen you discussing about online is the growth of this junior category that's going to come online. I believe it's the 2020 World Championships is going to have a junior women's category. You spoke about some other races putting in a junior category. You know, guesstimating, looking 5 years down the road, what impact do you think a junior women's category, what could it have on women's cyclocross at large?
I think it will, based on what's happened with the under-23s, I think it will be double the number of under-23s racing now off of their pathway through Euros and Worlds. And I think you can double that. So now you've probably got 7 or 8 riders that have come through the under-23s that are racing really well. I forgot to mention Celine Alvarado. She was European under-23 champion this year. And you take those riders, you double it, you've got 14 more that I think could easily stay in the sport. And the teams are professional, making the sport more professional, making the riders more professional, making it harder to win races, meaning you have to be more professional. And I think it will make for an incredible sport in 5 years. And it's incredible now, but imagine if you added in another whole group of Alvarados and Nobles and Richards and Worst and all of those riders, and you add another load of them, like, it's going to be a fantastic sport.
So, Helen, based on what you've seen at the World Cup and the Super Prestige and the other big races up to this point in the season, who do you have your eyes on for the World Championships?
I think it's going to be one of 15 riders. Mm-hmm. Do you need me to list them?
Sure.
I think it's going to be either Kant or Voss or Compton or Noble or Keogh or Richards, because I think she's going to ride Elite Worlds this year. I think it could be Worst or Bramia. I think we haven't seen the last of Lechner yet. She may be a bit slow off the ground to start with, but I think she'll be peaking for Worlds, and she's very good at that. Denise Betsema, Maud Kapteins, Ellen Van Looy, always good. And even with this changing group of riders, she's still consistently up there. Christine Mayeris, are we up to 10 or 11? Up to 11. I got to throw myself in there.
Of course.
I mean, I did do pretty well there last year. Katerina Nash, Laura Donskot. Oh, yeah, Azufi. You can't miss Azufi. She's really good.
I think that either Maud Kapteins or Sophie De Boer are going to win now.
Oh, Sophie De Boer. I forgot about Sophie De Boer. Yeah, there you go. There's another one.
Right. Well, I think the point you've made is very apt, which is that it's anybody's game. I mean, that speaks to the strength and the excitement of women's cyclocross this year.
Definitely. And I think the thing is, people would say, oh, yeah, well, discredit Kant. But you can never discredit Kant on a course like that. She's got to be the favorite still, and she's shown consistently that the first year she won wasn't a fluke, and the second year she won in completely different circumstances, and she still beat everybody in the very best way. And so I think that I think it will probably be Kent.
We've heard some stuff out of her camp that maybe she had a hard time with the travel to the United States and maybe picked up a bug on the way back. But, I mean, what can you say about Sana's racing in the first half of the season?
I think she's riding just as well as she's always ridden. She's still won races. I think she's won 3 or 4 races. Mm-hmm. It's just that there are so many other riders winning that you don't look and go, oh, Sana's going to win everything. And that... if she's not racing for a win, she doesn't always put in the same effort that she does if she's racing for a win. But so maybe if she's not winning or not going for a podium, she might get 7th or 8th. But equally, I do think it's just a case of every year you train harder, you know you're fitter, you know you're putting out more watts. You go to a bike race and somebody else is better than you. And that doesn't mean they're going to be better than you the whole season, but it does mean at that point, yeah, they've done exactly the same with you and they've moved on. And I think it's just so much more competitive this year being in the races than it's ever been. And that's why she's not dominant. But she's still won 4 races. There aren't very many female bike riders this year that have won 4 races.
All right, Helen. Well, hey, have a great time with the rest of your season. Best of luck. And
okay, thank you.
Yeah, have a great afternoon. We'll be right back.